Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to this May 8th edition of the program. It is lovely to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel to you and a reminder that you can join us and share your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Joining us this morning, we have WAMC's Alan Chartok at the head of the table. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Joe. Nice haircut.
Thank you very much.
You waiting for a shot?
No, I was just thinking of the last time I got my haircut.
You didn't get it?
Maybe 2 weeks ago.
Still a nice haircut.
I checked it just before we went on. I think I have a little too much spray on, so I think it looks a little bit.
We used to call back
product.
Back in the day, we used to call it. You have a little wave there, right in the front. Yeah. We'd call that a pompadour.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I always have. Yeah.
Spit
always
and polish.
The hair always looks like the Gulf of Mexico, but that's whatever. Anyway, Judy Patrick is with us as well, the Daily Gazette editor. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
It's always a delight to have you with us, and I thank you very much for being here. And political activist Libby Post, fresh from a very, very
major
cool
victory,
is with us this morning. So we thank you
very
much,
welcome.
And we congratulate you
thank
on.
You.
Bringing library services, continuing library services in Mount Vernon.
Yes, very important vote. The library was facing closure. The community came together. 2,500 people came out to vote, and we won with 77% of the vote.
And so what happens? They hire you as the political consultant? Is that what happens?
They hire me as a marketing consultant, yes.
Yeah,
and I do the strategy, and we do the direct mail, and we used everything at our disposal. We used social media, videos, robocalls.
Threats.
No. only that the library would
close.
Well,
threat is the library's
right,
going
right.
to close.
Yeah. Yeah. Robocalls, email blasts, and a great group of friends, who most of whom the average age was over 70, volunteers, these little, really little old Jewish women from Mount Vernon and volunteers, and the community came together from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. The vote was consistent. People were there all day long voting, and it was electric.
Were they voting on anything else?
Four trustees.
Oh, four trustees. So right, it was a library vote.
It was a library vote.
So you're more
at
likely to show up if you're a library type than if you're not.
One would think, but when we did targeting, I did really clear targeting around this in terms of the library. When we did the library mail, they have to mail to everybody, and they have to call everybody, and they have to email everybody, and we did a lot of that because the library can't say vote yes. But the one targeted piece we were able to do, which was the one vote yes piece, which is a bandwagon piece that I call featuring people in the community, we were able to target the voters who voted in the last mayoral race, and which is 2013, and the Obama presidential race, that lived in the EDs around the library, which is a much more urban part of the city. And
you
people
say,
came out in droves.
Now, you say you're not allowed to, the library isn't
right.
allowed to electioneer, obviously.
Right.
But there's always something like the Friends of the
Library.
Well,
and that's who did this.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
the Friends of the Library. I worked with the Friends. We put together a little pack called Mount Vernon Taxpayers for a Stronger Library. I always put together these little
picture
taxpayer.
Picture George Washington, Mount Vernon.
No. A picture of a book. But we always put together these taxpayer groups, so it answers the anti-tax people who are saying, we're the only one who speaks for the taxpayers. Well, that's not true. Here's this group of people. Over 200 people signed a petition saying they supported this. Their names were in the bandwagon piece. It was very effective and really brought people
in. Last thing, Joe, I know we're taking a lot of time on this, but it's so interesting. But when you say bandwagon, you mean if you can show that everybody's
momentum.
Doing it.
That's
momentum,
right.
Then, yeah.
Right. It's 200, 250 names that people collected. They signed a little petition, a supporter petition. They signed up online, as well as people in the community who were willing to come out and be, have a quote and a picture. And I also used quotes from prominent African Americans about the importance of libraries.
Yeah. So I hope everybody's been taking notes because we've just had a wonderful little primer on how to do
a vote. Right.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Very, very nice.
I'm very happy.
All right. Let's get to the news of the day. We'll start with the big story. President Vladimir Putin seemed to have pressed pause yesterday and took a step back, a blink, some are calling it. Vladimir Putin, faced with rising violence in southeastern Ukraine, threatened to draw in the Russian army at great cost and prompts severe new Western economic sanctions, pressed pause on Wednesday in what had started to look like an inevitable march toward war. But it remained unclear to analysts and political leaders on both sides of the Atlantic whether he was truly reversing course on Ukraine or if this was just another of his judo-inspired things. Using a far less ominous tone than in previous remarks about Ukraine, Mr. Putin told a news conference at the Kremlin that Russia had withdrawn its troops from along the border and that he had asked separatists to drop plans for a referendum on sovereignty this Sunday.
The pain level must have gone up somewhere that we don't know about. But clearly he's a little bit worried.
The business people, is what it said in here, is that the business people who the sanctions are against are starting to get to him and his inner circle.
And then,
so it's impacting people's pocketbooks.
And the economy.
Yeah, but also note that today, the latest news out of Russia today is that they're doing nuclear weapons exercises in Russia.
Right.
Very, very strident announcement of that. So game's not over yet.
Oh.
No, but I think a civil war, Judy, was probably a little bit more than he wanted.
Yes, but what exactly is going to happen next, whether this is indeed just a pause, is really the question.
Mm-hmm.
But things were getting, the idea that things could go very badly, very quickly, was starting to become more apparent.
Right. Meanwhile, the leaders of pro-Russian groups in eastern Ukraine said this morning that they would go ahead with a vote seeking autonomy, despite Putin's plea not
to. Ooh, you see, that's where it gets dangerous for a guy like Putin. We've all assumed that. I mean, I think he lit the match all right, and I think the fuse was burning.
Right now, he's trying.
But now he can't get the thing out.
That's right. That's right.
Reminds me of an episode of The Rifleman.
Well, I love that show.
Did you say it reminds me of an episode when, just in general, or one that you saw recently?
There was a particular thing. The dynamite was lit from the end,
okay.
And it was going, and he tried to get it out, but it exploded. It may not have been The Rifleman. It may have been Wanted Dead or Alive, which
or
is any, just as good
or
as
any of those, or the FBI or any of those kinds of shows.
The president said through spokesman Josh Earnest that while the U.S. would welcome a Russian military pullback, there has been no evidence that such a withdrawal has taken place. NATO officials confirmed that on Wednesday, saying they saw no troop movements as well. Senior British officials also reacted warily to Mr. Putin's announcement, noting that he had once before announced a sizable troop withdrawal from the border in a phone call with Angela Merkel, but moved only one battalion a modest distance. One official said that satellite photos that would better verify Mr. Putin's assertions would take a while to come through. So we wait and see, and what all is going on now.
One has to wonder what Stalin would have done, Brezhnev would have done. You know, I mean, that's where his training
Khrushchev
comes from.
Khrushchev would have come
down.
I mean, you know, Putin's, we're pulling back. It's like, I have a bridge I'd like to sell you. You know, it's like, are you kidding me? You know, nobody can see it, it's just posturing on his part.
Sky is falling in.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so there's a lot of talk, but in this day and age, we can verify a lot of things. So with some time, we will get some images or we'll get some intel.
Sure.
Let's hope it's good intel.
Yeah, no, I think his problem is that these guys who he emboldened are, they begin to believe their own stuff, as we say.
And we don't have to listen to you anymore.
Well, yes. I mean, I've seen it happen on college campuses. Mm-hmm. I've seen once the fuse gets lit, somebody says, okay, we're going to change things. We'll change the world.
Once people get power, they don't want to give it up.
Or once they think they have power.
But I do like the spokesperson's last name is Earnest. I think that's really
You like that?
That's really quite good, yes.
Very important.
Yes.
We're
going to
take... Nice. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go to other topics, and we welcome your letters, as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. To comment, don't forget you can also do that on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from Double H Ranch, Lake Luzerne, New York, providing outdoor Adirondack adventures for children with chronic and life-threatening illnesses. A serious fun camp. DoubleHRanch.org. Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, presenting Uke Fest, A 4-day music camp May 23rd to the 26th with All-Star Ukulele Concert on Saturday, May 25th. AshokanCenter.org. And Mount St. Mary College in Newburgh, Master's and online RN to BS in nursing degree programs for adult students, Postmaster's Nurse Practitioner Certificates in Adult and Family Health. MSMC.edu.
Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our discussion this morning. It is very nice to have you with us. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You all right?
No, I was yawning and I was trying to suppress it.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm sorry.
I thought you were sneezing or having
an
attack.
No, I wasn't sneezing.
Sometime.
And I really should be more on the alert because I missed it entirely.
But it's not a reflection on us.
No. It's just overall.
This is exactly the kind of thing which we shouldn't do, but we do all the time here.
What, yawn?
No, somebody said, you all right? Yeah, I was yawning. Okay, everybody out there says, well, he was yawning. Why should we be listening to this?
But you get up, you know, you get up early.
3 and o'clock. Quarter to 3 this morning.
I think yawns at any time of the day they're a cleansing of the system. They're all fine. The House of Representatives voted on Wednesday to hold Lois Lerner, a former Internal Revenue Service official accused by Republicans of abusing power, in contempt, laying bare the bitter divide over which much of the midterm elections will be fought. It was a moment of high drama, complete with allegations that the White House oversaw a Watergate-style cover-up that helped steal a presidential election, and invocations of Senator Joseph McCarthy and his delusions of widespread conspiracy. Good stuff. Republicans spent much of the day laying out a case for why the Obama administration is politically corrupt and, by extension, why Democrats could not be trusted with power. In doing so, they revealed the issues that, in addition to unhappiness with the Affordable Care Act, will form the legs of the stool on which their campaign strategy will rest.
Nothing like letting people know what you're doing, 2 years before the vote.
Stool is the operative word here.
Yes, it's true. Nice. And which leg?
So
isn't that dark place?
So I was watching on the bike this morning, the great bike for my part of my hour. I was watching Morning Joe, a man I truly detest, and they had the chairman of the committee who was doing this investigation on. And he said, I would never, never, under any circumstances, use this for political purposes, says this guy.
Right.
45 minutes earlier, one of the Republican groups puts out a nationwide thing saying give money to defeat to the Republican Party, even Morning Joe, because as you know he's a former Republican congressman, and I think he is a present Republican congressman, following me, he said that was wrong. You know, I mean, it was clear they thought that was wrong. Here's this guy standing up, swearing to the eternal heavens he would never raise a penny, not one penny, on the basis of this. And then they put out this nationwide appeal.
You know, here I go being idealistic and naive again, but doesn't Congress have more things to do? If something needs to be investigated, let's investigate it. Let's get to the bottom of it. Issue a report, come to some agreement about what happened, and then move on and start to address the real problems the nations have. Let's get to the bottom of these things and not use the halls of Congress for politicking.
And in the case of Benghazi, which we're talking about now, in the case of Lois Lerner, which we're talking about now, it's so clearly a scripted approach.
And it's the playbook, right? When Bill O'Reilly in February, when Bill O'Reilly had the opportunity to interview the president of the United States on a right before the Super Bowl, and the largest audience of television throughout the year, the first question that came out of his mouth was Benghazi. It wasn't about healthcare, it wasn't about Ukraine. It was about that.
So we know who signs his check.
Right. So this just seems to be more of that. But at what point does it, to Judy's point, do you get back to not the script, but to what actually needs to be done? And do the people react to that? And what fascinates me is that even if you get battered at the polls,
sure,
it doesn't seem to make a difference.
What do you mean? It doesn't.
I mean, even if they lose, lose on that message, it's not like you would think, okay, well, maybe we need a new message.
Right, right. No, they cannot get off of this. They cannot get off of we hate Obama and anything that's related to him, and that's where this is all coming from. They already investigated Benghazi. I remember that Hillary Clinton went to the Hill and was. I remember the images. They've already investigated Benghazi. They've already investigated the IRS. I mean, it's enough already. They're just grasping at straws because they don't have anything else to say. And what they're doing is just increasing the polarization. And their Big Ten strategy is getting smaller and smaller by the moment.
But this remains an issue that's out there that people are putting out there, and that the average American probably is having questions about. So I don't think we should close our minds to it. I think people in the media need to always be mindful, listen to what people are saying, look into it, and if there's new developments, report them. But in terms of this rhetoric, I think that. The average American, too, needs to look past that and recognize it for what it is.
Well, I just remember putting Bill Clinton down in the well of the House and trying him on this impeachment charge. Right. Didn't fool anybody, didn't stop anybody. He retires as the most popular president in the history of the United States. You know, it's got to be, you've got to give some credit to people to know what this is. And I think Joe's point is extremely good. We're in a mess. The Republican Party has really suffered at the polls. Look, they've lost Hispanics. They've lost women. What in the world do they think is going to bring them over the line? What, right. Benghazi? Or, right. Or indicting Lois Lerner? It seems to me that they've got to go in a different place.
We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. We would love to hear what you have to say on this issue. Libby Post, Judy Patrick, and Alan Chartok are here. We welcome your comments. We'll be back after this news break. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Joining us this morning, Alan Chartok, political activist Libby Post, and Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We always welcome your letters. In fact, we're going to read a couple right now.
Bernie says, good morning, all. You are talking about the futility of the Republican approach, and yet so I'm reading the Republicans have a chance of winning a majority in the U.S. Senate and in many House races, Someone is paying attention to these Benghazi IRS hearings, Bernie from Woodburn. I like to take a crack at that, if I may, simply saying, part of what is happening here is that there were, at one point, just at the perfect storm, a lot of Republican state legislatures. And what they did was to apportion their House seats in such a way that they would win. I mean, as a political scientist, I can tell you it's right. You can go and do whatever you want to check it out. But I think that was part of it. Texas, they wiped out virtually the entire Democratic team in Texas. So there's a certain amount of that that's going on. I don't know that it's Benghazi. I do think it has to do with taxes, though. I can tell you that much. People think that it's a little bit much. And then... Okay, so Margie says, hi, folks. I have heard it said that the yawn is a silent scream for coffee. Love you guys. That's what a yawn is, don't you know? And Julius, our longtime and wonderful correspondent, says, the multiple terrorist attacks in Beirut during Reagan's terms were far worse than Benghazi, and there were multiple security lapses, but no one went after Reagan, says Julius. And Tony says, this past week is the first time Ukrainian loyalists have fought back and killed Russian-backing fellow countrymen. Until then, Putin was able to go further without bloodshed. Now he's recalculating after Kiev called Moscow's bluff. And I think that's it for now.
All right, more to come. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we would love to hear from you. Let us talk about, you know, we've been talking about running for elections. We started off talking about the all-important library votes and positions for trustees of good people who say, I am going to serve my community. And Judy, you have a somewhat related story.
Yeah, in Duanesburg this year, no one is running for the school board. They, I think they have two open spots. No one has filed a petition.
What do they do when that happens?
Well, I think people will launch writing campaigns at the last minute.
Oh, yeah.
In Schenectady, there are three open positions, and only two people have filed to run. So is this something that's happening all over the state? We don't think so. We checked with the New York State School Boards Association. They said, no, it doesn't. It's not all over. This isn't widespread apathy. But from where we stand in covering a lot of school districts, we see this every once in a while. Sometimes there are 10 candidates for two positions, but many times there are not many candidates. For village elections last March, we talked about the fact that, you know, there were one person running for one seat. The elections were May 20th, and you vote on the budget. These are the biggest budgets these towns and cities and villages have, mm-hmm. oftentimes, the biggest payrolls. It's a huge amount of power, but often they don't get the kind of attention when it comes to running for these offices that the town board, the village board, and the city council do. And it's sometimes mystifying to me.
Well, I say God bless anybody who is who runs for these jobs, because they are not easy jobs. You've got to show up. You've got to show up regularly. You got to do your homework if you don't want to sound like a jerk, and they're very hard jobs. You have to be there,
and you don't get paid.
No,
school boards are not paid positions, unlike a town board or a village board or any of those other kinds of municipal elected positions. And so people really need to either be committed to education,
or
on one hand, or they're anti-tax people and they
or these are often jumping off places for
yes,
other
absolutely.
Political offices, like
right.
us running for the assembly, getting your name
right.
out there,
right.
you know, and doing that. What was Cece Ketchik before she was before she ran for
school board.
She was school board.
I think
yeah.
She
it
was.
Could have been in Duanesburg.
Yes, I think it was.
Nobody's had that seat since she left. I don't know.
So when you think
making that up.
Do you think when a story comes out like this that people say, oh, well, maybe we should do it or feel.
Yeah, that's why we're doing it now.
And right, but it's too late.
It's
one
late,
of the
yeah.
one of the
not
problems.
Not too late for a write-in, right?
Not too late for a write-in, but one of the problems they say is systemic is that there's only 20 days to start filing, gathering your petitions and get them in time to file with the school board. But, you know, people do it. People have done it for decades. And, you know, sometimes in a community, nothing has grabbed anyone's attention that they want to run for office. You know, school board, they're not in the spotlight as much as a town board mm-hmm. or a city council. You don't get those kind of controversial issues.
Except when people are upset with the schools
right.
or the budget.
Right, and I was going to say the danger here is that a bad person
right.
can get themselves elected to the school board in the absence of other better people running.
We had it in Ravenna, Queen, and Selkirk. That district had a sovereign citizen on the school board, and he wasn't paying taxes. So, yeah, you can get these bad, wacko kind of people on your school board railing about the teachers, railing about the taxes, and then he's not paying any taxes of his own. You know, I think he's now off that board. But, you know, you have to be very careful, and we have to be diligent. I think the other part of this is that people are leading busy lives, and
sure.
who wants the headache? You know, that's why, you know, elected office is now going to the highest bidder. Because if you have the money and you can self-finance a campaign, you run. But if you don't have that kind of money and you can't raise the money or don't want to raise the money, people just aren't, the good people aren't coming forward.
Now, in our town, I'll tell you how you judge. Lawn signs. Lawn signs are the great, I mean,
psychological warfare of
campaigns.
I mean,
lawn signs. It's
yes.
so interesting what they're looking like now. People are doing new
yeah.
things with them instead of the traditional things. They're looking a little bit more, you know, folksy, but it still takes money.
Oh, yes.
To do it.
Yes.
You know, in New York State, school board elections are non-political.
Right.
And
right.
you don't need to be registered to vote in a school board election. So it should be
right?
far easier.
You have to be registered with the schools.
But you don't have to submit.
You don't have to be registered with the Board of Elections.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's strange.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will tackle a few other issues. We will tackle a few more letters from the mailbag, and we will also get an update on our lockbox challenge.
Oh, boy.
And we'll find out about
lockbox.
And on that, we'll be right back.
Support comes from Rhinebeck Kitchen and Bath, with locations in Rhinebeck and Coxsackie, offering design, project management, and installation throughout the Hudson Valley since 1997. RhinebeckKitchenAndBath.com. Thomas Cole National Historic Site, Catskill in New York's Hudson Valley, presenting a lecture by John Wilmerding, curator of Master, Mentor, Master, Thomas Cole and Frederick Church, May 18th. ThomasCole.org. And Union Institute and University, Brattleboro, Vermont, offering an online graduate-level certificate in alcohol and drug abuse counseling, welcoming applications for fall term. MyUnion.edu.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel, Judy Patrick, Libby Post, Alan Chartok, and we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, we got some letters?
Oh, yes, we have some letters. Ron writes, good morning, I love your show. Three community comments and questions. One, isn't it true that the State Department has been underfunded to offer adequate protection for embassies for many years? Why is this not mentioned more in the press and the hearings? Two, is gerrymandering constitutional? It absolutely is. Mm-hmm. Justice Felix Frankfurter put it years ago, said, we're not getting into the political thicket. So as long as it's one man, one vote, one woman, one vote, that is constitutional and that has to be adhered to. But you can arrange those districts basically any way you want, except in order to deny voting power to minority groups. And the courts have so ruled. Three, didn't the IRS investigate liberal groups at the same time as conservative groups and also uphold processing their applications? If so, why is that not mentioned more often in the hearings? To that, I say, Ron, and I have great respect for you, but when people say to me, how come the press doesn't cover something? I always say back to them, how'd you find out about it? Where did you find out about it? No, it's been around. All of that's been around. Okay, so that was that one. And then also, so Doreen says, Common Core seems to have motivated candidates in school board elections. Information is the oxygen in which, oh, okay, gotcha. All right, good enough, good-o. This is a long one from Jeffrey. The Republican strategy is working for purposes of the 2014 congressional elections. Benghazi, the IRS, continued fabrication of Obamacare glitches when Fox News interrupts coverage of a live presidential press conference because it's determined that no questions on Benghazi were going to be asked. Millions of voters rely exclusively on this faux news station to inform themselves, and the polls indicate the Democrats could get clobbered in November. Look at it this way. Other than the lies they fabricate, what else have they offered in terms of constructive policy platforms in the past 6 years? Their cupboard is empty, says Jeffrey. And that's what I got. Do you have anything else, Joe?
That's what I got.
Okay.
Excellent. So let's move on to some other stories in the news. And we'll go to Janet Yellen. There was a Federal Reserve Chairwoman, Janet Yellen, painted a mostly upbeat picture of the economy emerging from a weather-induced winter slowdown, but gave no hints on when the central bank might start raising rock-bottom interest rates. In Capitol Hill testimony Wednesday, Yellen confirmed that the Fed is on target to end its controversial bond-buying stimulus program this fall and defended the Fed's easy money policies against criticism that they've helped Wall Street at the expense of average Americans. Still, Yellen warned that the job situation was far from satisfactory and that a recent slowdown in the housing market was worrisome.
You know, one of the interesting things about the economy now that I noticed, we do something every year called the Student Gazette, and we have kids write essays for us. And this year, one of our winning essays was from an eighth grader who wrote that she had a savings account and she only earned 36 cents in interest last year. And she could make more money picking money off the ground. So what has happened is people aren't saving anymore because the interest rates are so low. I mean, you have years after years after years, people aren't bothering. And I think that's really bad for the average American to get away from that habit of saving money. And it's part of what it's not probably an intentional part of the strategy, but it's definitely a byproduct.
So let me parse that because it's an interesting concept. If people have money, what should they do with it? I mean, you put it in the stock market. The stock market's actually been doing pretty well. That's a possibility. But
my eighth grader doesn't have enough to put in the stock market, I don't think. But so what else can she do with it?
You know, there was an interesting story. It is probably not relevant and probably ruled out of order by our chair here. But we were reading a piece the other day about somebody who knew, what's the wonderful investor?
Buffett?
Wayne
Buffett.
Buffett.
A rabbi in the town had very little in savings, like $16,000, and the wife urged him to give it to Buffett. And they still live in the same house. The rabbi still lives in the same house. And the account is now worth, on that $16,000, which Buffett agreed to invest, $25 million. That's incredible. It's a wonderful story. I like him.
Good investment. When you think about, so still pretty early, but people seem to like Janet Yellen.
I like her. I don't think she's the world's best speaker, but when you compare her to some of her predecessors, you can understand her. She has a beginning, a middle, and an end. She tells you what, Greenspan was impossible. I mean,
I just wonder if Greenspan said the same things that she said, whether there would have been such pushback and whether there's a little sexism going on because it's a woman now.
I'm sorry, I'm not following you. Where's the sexism here?
Well, just I know there was some pushback from what she said, and I was just wondering because nobody ever really pushed back on Greenspan. He said what he said. Everybody thought he was the finance god, and you know he knows what he's talking about. And Bernanke, to some degree,
it was like
too.
Listening to Casey Stengel or Yogi Berra.
Yeah. You know, it was the gospel, the financial gospel, and she's getting a little more pushback than they got, and I just wonder why.
You know, I think in part it's a reflection of the fact that the economy is more politicized than it was 10 years ago. It's more of an issue to blame the administration for the current economic woes, although that happened to some degree 10 years ago as well.
Also, it could be the same thing we've been talking about with Benghazi and everything else. Nobody, if she comes along and gives some what I interpreted as pretty good news, that's the last thing
that
some people want to hear.
Right. Yeah.
Whenever I hear good news, I always like to turn in good news about anything. I like to turn into talk radio to see how they can find the bad news in it. It's always, and it's fascinating, the spin.
But they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
NBC Universal agreed on Wednesday to pay $7.75 billion for the exclusive broadcast rights to the 6 Olympic Games from 2022 to 2032. Highlighting with that staggering sum the supreme value that media companies are placing on live event programming in a market disrupted by modern viewing habits. As more viewers consume media on their own schedules, often without commercials, broadcasters regard live events as the only content that compels most viewers to watch in real time, which to me is interesting because they don't run the Olympic events on live time, but that's another
story.
But
we think we're watching it live.
Yeah, but we're not.
I know, but that's why you can watch it on your
Meanwhile,
your
we've already found
Kindle.
Out who won in
yes, right. Don't listen.
Or, that's right.
Turn
yes.
away from the screen.
Spoiler alert.
So a long time ago, a very famous politician, U.S. Senator, Republican, came to my mother and said, who ran the Fire Island Youth Group, and said, could you promote her to groups up? And my mother said no, and she said, don't you know who I am? And she said, my husband is slaving for you in Washington right now. And my mother said, tell him to come home, I didn't vote for him. And the point being, of all of this, I don't watch the Olympics.
Gotcha.
But it it's huge business. And one of the real fascinating parts of the story is that they're leaving open how they're going to distribute the Olympics in the future. Whether they don't know whether they're going to be tablets.
What that technology
whether
would
be. Something you hold in your palm of your hand.
I think that's a great, I mean, from a business point of view, but, you know, it's a great way of looking at it that we know technology is going to change. We all might have Google Glass and be able to watch it right there for all we know.
And they did, NBC did release a statement saying that they believe by 2032 that Bob Costas's pink eye will clear it up. So that's good. That's good news. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get a lockbox update. We welcome your comments as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
This is Pat Bradley in WAMC's North Country Bureau. To hear us in the Champlain Valley of New York or Vermont, tune in to 91.9 Plattsburgh or 103.9 Ticonderoga. In the Adirondacks, listen on 88.7 Lake Placid. There are myriad issues and stories, including our economy, agriculture, tourism, that we cover across the Adirondacks, the North Country, Vermont, and even southern Quebec. Catch it all on the air, our digital platforms, and at WAMC.org.
Most of you probably know that we have a lockbox. It is a device to try to make the fund drive as painless as possible and have start off with lots of money in that lockbox. So we got this incredible news over the weekend that we got challenged, and so we have to make a lot of money before the fund drive. And Megan Finnegan is here to tell us an update. But real quick, Alan, Mr. Big challenged us.
Mr. Big said if we could raise $200,000 on top of what we already had
in
the lockbox, he would give us $25,000. Think about that, folks, $25,000. Now, I heard yesterday that there are some people who are going around thinking that Mr. Big, because of Mr. Big in the movies, was Chris Noth, who does live in our area. I can neither confirm or deny that. In fact, more on the deny side than on the confirm side. What can I tell you? Go ahead, Megan.
Well, as of this morning, we've got $141,851 in the locked box.
How much again? Did you say that one more time?
$141,851.
Okay, so we really need to get going here. Yeah. Everybody has to put something in. Look, there are tens of thousands of people listening right now. If everybody just marched to the computer and put in, you know, at WAMC.org.
Maybe
just
Chris Knopf.
We'd be done. Yeah.
It'd be great.
And you can also phone in as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, you can phone in. 1-800-323-9262, extension 145. You can ask for Gretchen, or you can do it on the website.
Here's the thing. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but the thought of losing that $25,000 is really awful. It would be awful. I mean, I'm just going to go home then. That's it.
So when is the fund drive this year?
The first
summer.
Week in June. Yep.
June 2nd. Starts June 2nd. And time is going quick. And
Very quick.
We got the mugs, right?
The mugs, you get your name on it. Personalized mug.
That's awesome. Mug. And what else were you?
Well, if you contribute $50 or more, you get the WAMC VIP card, which is a new thing that we're doing. It entitles you to discounts at participating businesses across the region. Yep. Brand new.
That's Vippy. Great. Excellent. So $50 and you get the card.
Right.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. So all kinds of good stuff, all kinds of incentives. And all you have to do is go to the website, WAMC.org, or give a call, 1-800-323-9262, and help out the lockbox.
Everything
counts.
There's
a lot of money riding on this, so please, please, please. And again, the fund drive begins June 2nd, so we have to do it by then. Megan, you're great. Thank you so much. We'll see you tomorrow for another update. Thank you. Libby Post, Judy Patrick, and Alan Chartok, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Whoa.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
No problem.
I got a whoa out, Alan. Here, I'll even
okay,
mic
there
you,
go.
Libby. There you go.
Yes, thank
Excellent.
You so much.
Excellent. Thank you. Yes, and maybe after the challenge, we can get four microphones. we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Thank you all very much, and the roundtable continues after this short break.